Welcome to the Sean Chandler Podcast, a place to talk movies and nerd culture way too much. Today we got a special guest, one of my very good YouTube friends, Rachel Wagner. Rachel, how's it going?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I have been good. Getting a little bit crazy here at the Chandler household with now like 4 months of us being stuck at home. And right as we started to be able to go back out to the pool and stuff like that, then it was like, let's back off. So kids are getting a little bit crazy, but that's half the fun. I've been trying to channel their energy. So on my second channel, I've turned it basically into my family channel over the last couple of weeks. So that's been fun turning them into, you know, YouTube stars.
Yeah, they're so cute. I love seeing them on. It's a lot of fun. I've kind of had the reverse situation because I'm single and I live alone. So I felt like all of a sudden I'm going back into hermit mode. So thank you so much for having me on your show.
No problem. All right. Since this is your first time here on the podcast, obviously you've been on the channel many times before. Kind of introduce yourself. Kind of what's your little niche? What's the stuff you kind of specialize in?
Yeah, thank you so much. So I am Rachel Wagner. I'm a film critic. And on my channel, Rachel's Reviews, my channel/podcast, we cover a lot of animation, do monthly Talking Disney and obscure animation. And then I also do weekly family movie nights every week. And then I also am the founder and host of the Hallmarkies podcast. And we cover basically all things rom-com, all things Christmas, not just Hallmark. But right now we're doing Christmas in July, so that's super fun, and we have a great time and a fun group of girls that help me and host the podcast, and it's great. I love it. Thank goodness for it. I don't know what I would have done without the podcast.
Right. So the big idea today is that we're halfway through the year, so I wanted to talk about movies thus far. So I wanted to have a group of people with very different tastes or some different tastes than myself, because like for me, Extraction is the movie I was like, I'm gonna stay up till 2 a.m. to make sure I watch Extraction. I want to watch Chris Hemsworth shoot people in the face. And then Rachel, in your case, you're probably like, I don't think I need to watch him shoot people in the face. But you watch a bunch of different types of films. That's what the kind of conversation I was looking for. Hey, Griffin.
Hey, how's it going? I'm just here. Don't worry. I continue everything you're talking about. I'm just chilling here. No, I'm all right, man. I just got back from a weekend visiting some family. So that was a little nice escape there. But stuff started stockpiling. You start freaking out and you're like, well, okay. So I come back and I have like literally this entire book of things to do. So that's great. But no, it was lovely. So can't complain.
So you got on a plane?
I did.
Actually traveled?
I did. Wow. Yeah.
Brave. Brave soul.
We kind of went back and forth between doing this for a while, but you know, I hadn't seen my family in like a year or so, and then my girlfriend had also never met my family, so it was just kind of and listen, they live in a very secluded area in Connecticut, so it's like, if we're gonna go visit anyone, that seemed like an appropriate like place to go. We took the precautions, we had all the masks and everything, and actually the airports were really like vacant. Like there was hardly anyone there. We flew into JFK. I don't think I've ever seen JFK that like inactive. And then we flew out of Boston, and Boston was lit. It was a ghost town. So was it the smartest thing to do? Maybe not, but like I, at least from my perspective, just like seeing all of that, it was probably the right time to go do this, since people weren't traveling, and planes weren't fully booked. So, it was nice. It was nice.
And that's what I kind of been thinking. Like, there's a lot of things right now that on the one hand, they sound really scary because obviously you're in a tube filled with people from all over the world.
Yeah.
That's kind of dangerous right now, but because it is so dangerous, no one's doing it. And so, that other sense, it's like, and they know it's super dangerous. So they're just cleaning everything. It's like, I've been back to the gym. That's probably the cleanest place on planet Earth right now. Like, I walk into my gym and they hand you a bottle and a towel and they say, clean everything before, after you do everything. You have to wear gloves. I mean, it is unbelievably clean right now.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess when it comes to the gym, I'm always like concerned about the other people because like people don't wipe it down regularly. Like they're always like really lazy to do that. So I'm like, are they going to wipe it down now that they have to? And so I guess it's definitely like a case by case basis. But the fact that they're doing that at your gym is good because that's I've been really hesitant about going back to an actual gym because of that, like just for people. And, you know, with cases rising in LA and stuff like that, it's just like, OK, all right, maybe I hold off for a little bit.
But I don't think the coronavirus travels through surfaces. I think they figured that out, that it really doesn't that was a big concern at first. But I think it's less of a concern.
Isn't that
now
the big frustration of all of this, that everything that they told us at one point in time, kind of backpedaled on it? It's like, okay, I just, man, that's, I just wish you knew what the definitive answer science on so much of this stuff is. But anyway, gyms, air travel, now 2020 movies. Here's how this is going to work. We're going to talk kind of all things, trying different directions, exploring the movies that have come out in the first half of the year, which would be interesting in and of itself because theaters were closed more than half of what we've had this year. But then we'll talk about Hamilton in the middle of this, and we'll kind of give our picks for the best, the worst. But let's kick things off right now with, on a positive note, for everyone, Rachel, let's kick it off with you. And in the comment section, let us know, what was the biggest surprise for you or surprises thus far? The movies that you thought, man, I don't think this is going to be very good. The ones that were pleasant, positive surprises for you.
So my biggest surprise of all was Timmy Failure, Mistakes Were Made on Disney Plus. So this premiered at Sundance, and I was kind of irritated about it because I'm like, why is Disney getting a spot at Sundance? This is ridiculous. Yeah. And I still think it's kind of ridiculous, but it made a little bit more sense once I saw the film because it definitely has kind of a Sundance-y vibe, an indie vibe to it. Some people just joked that it was like Portlandia for kids, and I can kind of see that. And I just thought it was so cute. I just loved it. Little Timmy with his polar bear and his Segway, and you know, going all around Portland. I don't know. I thought it had some really sweet moments. There's the conversation between Craig Robinson and Timmy where he talks about adaptability, and it was such a sweet, heartfelt moment. And so I really enjoyed that way more than I thought I was going to, because again, I was kind of stinky about it coming out of Sundance. And
Was it the direction? What is it? Spotlight? Or what's the one? That, it's like this. He went from like this Oscar, very serious movie to like Disney Plus original adaptation of a book. That's like this quirky movie about a kid on a Segway with a polar bear. It's like, this is weird, but the movie itself works pretty well. Griffin, have you seen that one?
Timmy Failure? No, I haven't. I mean, I've heard exactly what Rachel is saying is like everything I've heard about that film. So I mean, it's on Disney Plus, so I might give it a watch like one of these days. But yeah, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I mean, you're obviously not the target audience necessarily. Like, I wouldn't think Griffin, right. Man, I bet he's going to jump on Disney Plus to watch Timmy Failure with a title like that. That just sounds screams Griffin, right? But it is a nice little pleasant surprise. Did you have some other ones, Rachel?
I was surprised by Sonic. I thought it was, I don't think Griffin liked Sonic, but
no, but that's okay.
I thought it was really cute. I thought it was sweet. And I liked the friendship between Sonic and James Marsden. I thought it was sweet. And I just overall just it made me smile. I enjoyed it. I thought it looked terrible. So maybe low expectations helped.
Well, and that's the idea of a surprise is those ones that I mean, those initial trailers where it was like obviously looked bizarre at first. And it's like, why is this a road trip movie? And then that had a nice little charm to it.
Mm-hmm. And then I was surprised by The Invisible Man, just because I'm not a horror person in general. And I liked it way more than I thought I would. I thought it was I particularly liked, you know, Elizabeth Moss's performance. I thought it was really good, and had some, especially I think the first like hour of it, first part of it is pretty strong, and then it gets a little bit more silly towards the end, but overall I enjoyed it, so I would say that was also a surprise for me.
Which is an interesting one, because for both Griffin and I, that was one that we were like top of our like, man, I can't wait to see The Invisible Man. But that's the whole point of this discussion, is that such different perspectives were, to you, that's a pleasant surprise because you had assumed you would hate it. For us, we're like assumed we would love it.
Yeah.
And then I'm pretty sure we both did.
The Universal like monster movies or whatever had been so bad up to the point too. So that also kind of made me, I don't know about this. But it was good.
You didn't happen to see Upgrade, his previous movie, did you?
I did. Yeah, I saw Upgrade, which I liked. I wasn't as in love with it as you, but I liked it. I thought it was pretty clever.
That's the type of movie that I just get really excited about, just the way that it was crafted and everything like that. Griffin, what were your biggest surprises for the year 2020 thus far?
Yeah, I think my number one biggest surprise, and still one of my favorite films of the year, was Birds of Prey, because I thought the marketing for that film was just absolutely terrible. None of the trailers really sold me on anything. And then I go into the movie and I'm like, this is just a blast. Like, this is, it feels like stylistically like a Tarantino or a Guy Ritchie movie, but it's got like the meta humor, and it's got like some, like, you know, breaking the fourth wall, a little bit of Deadpool in there. But then it's just also a really good story on, you know, people just trying to get out of abusive situations. And so it's like that packed with like amazing action, packed with like great style, amazing performances. Ewan McGregor as Black Mask is just, I could watch him do that character all day. I just walked out like with a smile on my face. I was like, yeah, that was a blast. I am going to be rewatching that a lot. So Birds of Prey to me was like, that was the biggest like shocker, I think, of the year for me.
Because I'll double that one. That was one of them. I've got a couple of them, and that's absolutely one of them for the exact same reasons. I didn't like that they announced the project. Was like, we're not getting Man of Steel 2, but we're doing Birds of Prey. We're doing a Birds of Prey movie, but it stars Harley Quinn. I didn't like the first images they put out. I didn't like the trailers that they put out. And then I really, really dug the movie. Did you see Birds of Prey?
I did not. Yeah, I just, it was right around Sundance. I was just two, and I haven't. I don't know. My relationship with the DC fandom is mixed, so I'm hesitant to even go there, to be honest. Yeah.
Fair enough. I
totally understand, especially in light. If you guys don't know, I mean, when Shazam came out, DCEU fans did not respond well to her take on the movie, to say the least. Not all fandoms are the same. They respond differently to differing opinions, and the DCEU tend to be a little bit more hostile when you don't like something that they liked. Which other ones did you were surprises for you, Griffin?
Let's see. I mean, so I say Extraction, but like, I don't know. The trailers were really great, but it was like knowing that it was a Netflix movie and it was like doing this sort of thing. It was like, okay, I've seen really great Netflix movies marketed this way. And not hit the mark that Extraction did. And then Extraction came out and I was like, oh, wow, this is like this should be seen in a theater. This is like that good. So I was a little, I don't know if I was surprised. I guess I was more surprised in the fact that I got exactly what was advertised to me. So I'd say that one. And then, you know, I like Scoob more than most people, but I thought it was cute. And then I just watched Greyhound yesterday with Tom Hanks. Mm-hmm. The trailers for that looked absolutely garbage. Like, I thought it looked so bad, and I could not for the life of me understand why Tom Hanks was in that film. Movie's actually not bad. Like, it's very, like, it's short, it's brisk, but it's, like, confident in what it is. And, like, Tom Hanks is very stoic in it, of course, but it's, like, a really solid, like, war thriller with great sound design. And it keeps you on the edge of your seat. So I think people are definitely going to dig that one when it comes out on Friday.
All right. For me, one of the other one that was a big surprise for me, and I haven't seen Greyhound yet, but was Bad Boys for Life. Long delayed sequels have a bad reputation. January releases have a bad reputation. That they had a director swap. The trailers weren't abysmal, but they also didn't seem to like fully catch it. And then I thought it was the best one of the bunch. You know, you can debate how high that bar is, but yeah, I thought that the chemistry was still there. It was still funny, kind of more heartfelt, tied, you know, back to their history and everything. So I was very pleasantly surprised. In fact, I went to go see it, and I'm the action movie guy, so I'm biased to like see that movie and just have fun with it. And I walked out of the theater like, I think I really liked that. I think I really dug it. I'm going to wait a little bit to see how everyone else responds before I get too giddy, because I could be wrong. Like, I could just be misreading this, because that frequently happens with me in action movies. And then I brought a guy with me, friend, and then a couple of my other buddies just happened to be there. And so then everyone was like, that was actually better than I was expecting it to be. I was like, okay.
You can breathe now.
Yes. So it felt much better after that one, but that one was a real pleasant surprise for me. I was not expecting that one to remain in my top five of the year thus far, or be at any point in time particularly well received by me. And there it is. Because then again, it is also your 2020. So the number of movies that were supposed to come out to kick it out of my top five that were dropped was pretty high too. So, Rachel, did you see Bad Boys for Life?
I did. Yeah. And I liked it way better than I expected. So I guess it's a surprise.
Yeah.
So it's very violent for me, but I enjoyed it.
And so I was wondering how my wife would respond to it when it came out on video, and finally watched it with her and see if she would appreciate the emotional aspects or just be put off by all the people being shot in the face. And you know, she liked it more than the other ones. So that's a plus, I guess.
That's a good sign. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Looking in the comments, a lot of people saying Birds of Prey, some Sonics, and a couple Onwards in there. But, you know, it's a little bit of a weird batch of some of these are a little bit tricky because we didn't get so many films. But let's move on the opposite side of this one to our biggest disappointments of the year thus far. The movies that when we say biggest disappointment, it doesn't necessarily mean we think it's bad, though you might think it's bad. It's that you thought it was going to be here and it's below that. So if you thought something was going to be the best of the year and it's only good, that's a disappointment. It's that biggest negative gap is what I mean when I say disappointment. Rachel, what are some of those biggest disappointments for you?
Yeah, so this is a movie that I actually went fresh on, but I was hoping I'd love it.
Yeah.
Is Wendy from director Ben Zeitlin. I love Beast of the Southern Wild, his previous film. And I think there's a lot to love about this movie as far as it is beautifully shot. The way it uses music is really strong. So it was just enough for me to recommend it, but it has a very heavy-handed touch to it. And I don't know, it was kind of unpleasant to watch. And just the tone, and you're dealing with children and children being taken away from their families. And it's supposed to be this like modern take on Peter Pan, but I don't know, it just didn't have any whimsy to it at all. And I feel like it needed a little bit of whimsy to make it more palatable. And so it just didn't quite. It worked just enough for me to recommend it because of the visuals, but it was disappointing for sure. So that's one.
I haven't seen that one. Griffin, have you seen that one?
No, I've wanted to see it for a little while because I really love the score by Dan Romer. But I just
listened to the score, but you haven't seen the movie.
Oh yeah, I actually do that frequently. Griffin. Yeah, that is a very me thing to do. I do that a lot, but yeah, I don't know. I haven't been in the right like mindset to want to watch the movie. But I mean, basically what Rachel is saying is, again, like what I've heard about it was just like people either really liked it or like kind of mixed on it, you know? So we'll see. One of these days I'll check it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The music is the strongest part of the cinematography, the way that it uses the music. So that's probably a good call just to listen.
It's a great score. Like it's really good.
But I was also disappointed in the Willoughbys. I was really hoping I would love it, but I just didn't think it was that funny. And I liked the animation, but it was kind of disappointing to me. I thought that Irresistible was lame. I didn't think it was funny. hardly at all. It was like a bunch of people having meetings, and that is so boring. I don't know. I just didn't think it had any bite. I don't, maybe it's just because it's, oh, by the time it was released, what it was talking about is now dated for what we're dealing with now. And so I don't know, but
actually, I need to make a note of that one because I didn't have that on my list of biggest disappointments. But I need to add it to it because that's a good pick. Because Steve Carell, Rose Byrne is our leads, Chris Cooper. That's a great cast. And then Steve Carell reteaming with Jon Stewart, because I mean, that's going back 15 years before The Office. He was on The Daily Show. So there's so many things about this that made you think, oh, man, this could be really good. And then it's like, I liked it more than you did. But it wasn't nearly as good as it needed to be or should be, or funny. It wasn't as funny.
Yeah, I saw it at the drive-in and I saw Jaws after. And I was joking. I felt like Jaws had more laughs than Irresistible. But I don't know. It was just not funny to me and disappointing. And another one that I thought was that could have been good with the cast is Downhill. With Julia Louise Dreyfus and Will Ferrell. Should have been funny. It wasn't. It was just uncomfortable and kind of boring. And just, why am I watching these people fight? Like there's a whole thing that like people think that people shouting is inherently funny. It's really not.
Yeah.
So that was disappointing. And then Scoob. I had never seen an episode of Scooby-Doo in my life. Never seen anything, so I was totally green.
Oh,
that's crazy!
Know.
Yeah,
because wow. I didn't like scary things growing up, and so I, you know, it was spooky stories, and so I never watched Scooby-Doo, and so I went into this thinking, oh, this is going to be a fun mystery show, and I don't know, I just thought this is a generic superhero movie at best.
So to that point, we had a super chat come in from CM Waters. He says, Scoob was massively disappointing. It's not just a ripoff of the MCU. It's basically the Avengers, but with stock Hanna-Barbera characters. I would tend to agree. That was my frustration with it, is that they stripped away the distinctives of a Scooby-Doo mystery to make it a Hanna-Barbera shared universe movie that threw in superhero movie cliches. Instead of what you go in for a Scooby-Doo movie, it's called Scoob, and it's the first movie in this franchise. And I think that's where a bunch of us were just like, okay, the first 15 minutes gave me what I wanted, and then it gave me this weird thing. Griffin, you liked it a little bit more. Could you give
quick defense? I mean, I thought it was cute, and I'm like, look, for your first big Scooby-Doo movie in theaters like that, you probably should have played more to like. What the brand of your property is, but like we have so many other movies and other like shows that sort of like showcase that. So like you want to watch that stuff, go watch the original Scooby-Doo stuff. But like, I don't know. I thought like Scoob was harmless. It was cute. It had a good message. It was really emotional at times. And I thought the Hanna-Barbera characters that they integrated into the story worked really well. Like I loved Jason Isaacs as Dick Dastardly. I loved Mark Wahlberg as Blue Falcon. And Ken Jeong is Dino Mutt. And I don't know. I had enough fun with it. It's not like the greatest animated film I've ever seen. And like, yeah, there is some cringy and outdated humor in it. But I think, I don't know, when it's all said and done.
Are you saying that a Simon Cowell reference in the year 2020 might be an odd reference for a children's movie?
That was bad. There was like, look, I liked the film, but there is definitely some like questionable stuff in there. Like, I don't know what that whole diner scene was where they start singing Shallows and Simon Cowell. That's like one of the worst things I think I've ever seen in an animated movie. But like, I don't know. I, when it was all said and done, I was like, okay, that was fine. It was cute. I'm sure kids will love it, which is, and like families who grew up with Scooby-Doo will also be able to enjoy it with their kids. So it's like, I don't know. I felt like, I don't know what people were expecting based off of the trailers. I guess that was like my thing. It's like the trailers kind of showed that it was going to be a Hanna-Barbera universe sort of thing with Scooby-Doo. So I don't know.
So in my kind of lead up to trailer reactions, I kind of voiced my like, I did voice a concern. And they're like, I like this part where it shows like the nostalgia vibe and how they're meeting each other. But all this stuff where they're in spaceships, I don't think I'm going to like that. And then as it turned out, that was what happened. I liked in the part where they're on spaceships with superheroes. I was like, I don't, I think from a lot of it, from the conversations I've had, a bunch of us were frustrated that this was the first movie and that it felt like it followed the superhero template so much. There's even a heroic sacrifice. There's a sky beam with garbage circling over a city. Those are like really specific superhero cliches of the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And they're in this movie. And the Chosen One, they work the Chosen One into a Scooby-Doo movie. It was odd. Such a weird thing to go.
Yeah, they were like trying to replicate the Lego movie formula for Scooby-Doo, which I think on paper isn't a horrible idea. I think you can do it in a way that's interesting with like other Hanna-Barbera characters. But yeah, I understand why people probably wouldn't like it because of like the the lack of everything that makes Scooby-Doo Scooby-Doo, basically. Yeah. Or at least that stuff was just in like the first 15 minutes. Yeah.
When they break the team up too.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
We do our mystery and then it's like, do this. And I think that just you kind of lost the things that I went in wanting were all in the first 15 minutes. And then it was like, I don't understand why you're giving me all this other stuff. So that was really frustrating. My kids loved it. So I've seen it like 5 times.
Which I expected kids would probably love it just because the visuals, the fun, the characters and all the stuff. So, yeah,
I guess it did its job then if it was supposed to entertain kids.
Yes. Very, very true. And I think that's one of the things I think I appreciate about being able to review movies while having kids. It changes the experience on some of these films, gives you a better perspective. So imagine like I see sometimes, some of our peers and, they're 26, 27 and they go by themselves to go watch Playing with Fire. Yeah, you're sitting in the theater by yourself and there's a bunch of families. They're probably looking at you weird. It's probably an odd experience to watch John Cena doing fart jokes as a fireman without kids with you. So, yeah, you're probably not the target audience. That's not the way this is meant to be experienced.
I feel that way when I see YouTubers ranting about Disney Channel original movies, like the Descendants movies or whatever. You see these YouTubers going off about it and I'm just like, this movie was not made for you at all. It's made for teenagers and younger. Right.
Sometimes people like ask me to kind of rank stuff like that or like Diary of a Wimpy Kid. And I want to as politely as possible be like, and I'm not going to respond the way you did to that. You watched it when you were 10.
Right.
I'm 38 right now. Like, this is not going to, I can't evaluate that properly.
And like you can't give everything a complete pass just because it's
for a particular
audience. But nevertheless, it needs to at least be considered
in context. That
they're making this for television, for teenagers and younger. And is it good on that level? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. It depends. But these people just rant about it. I'm like,
using it as fodder for a rant. I think that's the thing that's like, what are you doing? Like,
I know.
Like, you give an honest opinion, but the ranting, like, oh man, I'm just going to tee off on Playing with Fire.
Yeah.
I'm going to tee off on the Descendants. Like, come on.
Yeah, it's just they just want to rant about something, so they just pick an easy target. So
sorry if Descendants hurt your childhood.
That's stupid. Like, that just doesn't. Whatever.
Yeah.
And I get there's an audience for that. People like to as you get a little bit older, you realize how some of the stuff from your childhood was kind of silly, or you're just a little bit too old for something.
Yeah.
And so it's ridiculous to you for a window of that. Like, so I'm here's just going to give a music based example of this. So I'm old enough that I was just above being the target age for the band Blink 182 when they first came out. And so they come out with these songs like What's My Age Again and stuff like that. And I was like, this is so immature. What is this? And then they went on to be this highly praised pop punk band of the decade. And, I came around to them eventually, but it was like, you kind of have this phase where you start like putting your nose up at stuff that's targeted towards people a little younger than you. And, you can see that a little bit in the YouTube space. Wait, what are we talking about? We're talking about disappointing movies.
How dare you diss Blink 182? That's over here.
I came around. Like, I would now not say what I said before, but like when they first came out and I was like, this chord progression is the most generic pop punk chord progression of all time. I was like, but all of the bands that I loved that were pop punk bands also used this exact same chord progression.
Yeah.
And so have I in all my songwriting. But yeah, it was, there's a lot of that. That kind of goes onward. people play games like that. But
I have to say real quick, as far as things made for teenagers, Babysitter's Club for Netflix, it's so good.
Yeah,
I've heard great things. Loved it. And if you like good storytelling, good writing, it's not just for young girls. In my opinion, I thought it was very well done.
Very nice.
Good stuff.
Babysitter's Club. I don't think I'm going to check it out, but if someone asks me, I'll say that I've heard good things about it.
It was very well written. They did a very good job, in my opinion.
All right. Real quick, I want to spend some time talking about Hamilton, and then we'll loop back around and talk about our favorites, least favorites of the year thus far. But this weekend, the thing that everybody on Twitter and on the internet were talking about was Hamilton, this Broadway play that was a massive, massive hit, and it dropped on Disney Plus, a filmed version of the play. And I've had a nonstop stream of people tweeting at me, direct messaging me on Instagram, and leaving comments asking me, what did I think about Hamilton? Did I watch it? I have watched it. It took me two different sittings because it's 3 hours long. But after two different sittings, I finally finished it last night. And I wish I had something more insightful or useful to say about Hamilton, but like, I'm just not a Broadway musical kind of guy. I couldn't tell you what my favorite one is. I can respect the art that goes into this kind of thing. I can see watching it like, wow, that was very clever the way that they were able to rhyme those words while telling American history and being funny at the same time. I can watch all of that and respect it. But am I on the train of people that are like, I can't stop thinking about Hamilton? That's just not me. I'm just not that person. So I'm glad I watched it. I'm glad I've experienced it one time. It's not one that I'm thinking I'm going to be rewatching anytime soon. I think on a story level, did a really nice job of covering years and years of history and having emotional ups and downs, having our heroes that have false, complex characters where it's not as simple as good guy, bad guy. You can see jealousy rising up. I can appreciate all of that. There are some really cool musical segments in it. But at the end of the day, is this something that I plan on re-exploring a bunch of times? I really don't. That's not specific to Hamilton. That's just in general. This is not something I would naturally gravitate towards. I don't put on Phantom of the Opera a bunch. I don't put on Les Mis a bunch in my house. There's not a Broadway musical that is the one that I'm super duper into and have on loop. And Hamilton just falls into that category once again of like, oh, that was really good. I'm glad I experienced that once. I'm glad I can have a conversation with someone about it. I'm just not the target audience for it. Rachel, however, I think you have a different experience with it. And you've actually seen it live. I saw Les Mis on Broadway back in like 1995. That's my Broadway story as a child that had no idea what Les Mis was, but we were there and my sister knew about that stuff. And so I saw Les Mis. So that's my Broadway story. That's the one that I'm biased towards because I have actually seen it on Broadway. But anyway, tell us, what did you think about Hamilton?
Yeah, so I saw the touring company in 2018 here in Utah, and I loved it. And I was nervous about it because I'd spent quite a bit on my ticket, and I thought, oh, is this going to be overhyped? But I just thought what it does so brilliantly, I think, is that it mixes this hip hop stylings with traditional Broadway stylings so that it makes it feel so fresh and different than any other Broadway show. And then only obviously the casting is different than you are expecting, the storytelling, you know, that it's taking on history. It's just, there's so many things about it that are so different than anything we'd ever seen before on Broadway. And it was such kismet, I thought, that they ended up releasing this the week that they announced that Broadway was going to be closed for the whole year. So people there, you know, big Show Tunes fans were feeling very sad. I was feeling very sad about that. I mean, just all the people with their jobs and so many, it's just such a traumatic thing to think of Broadway being closed for the whole year. And so to have kind of this gift from Broadway, I don't know, I just felt like that was really amazing. And So I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought they did a very good job in the staging of the musical. The times when they decided to do close-ups, times when they decided to, you know, kind of give you the experience of the audience. And it was a different experience, obviously, than what you get when you're watching it live. And it was fun to see the original cast. To see Lin-Manuel and see Davy Diggs, I think was probably the star, especially as Jefferson. I thought he was so funny. Yeah. And I think it's a pretty funny show. It's a heartwarming show at times. It's a thoughtful show at times. It really manages to do a lot of different things within this one show. And I know some people are, you know, kind of about its historical representation, but I think they did Lin-Manuel came out, I think yesterday, and said, you know, we did the best we could. And I think they did. And so I really, really enjoyed it. And at the very least, I think it's something different, something right. new that we haven't seen since Newsies was the last one that got this kind of treatment as far as a Broadway show, and that got released into theaters. And the Broadway version of Newsies got a pretty theatrical release. And so somebody who's a huge Broadway fan, it was really cool to see. And it's just cool that so many people that could never have afforded the ticket prices that are getting a chance to see Hamilton getting exposed to the arts, because I'm really worried about the arts right now.
Right. Well, it's kind of to what you mentioned before of like the timing of all of this, when they decided to kind of announce it, have it. It is this time where you kind of fear for some of these things. For very obvious reasons, that this is a way to expose more people to it. And that's what kind of everything you mentioned in there, I hear what you're saying and I go, yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd agree with all of that. And that's why I even struggled, like, how would I didn't want to do a full review on my channel because I just don't know how to review something where I'm in no way criticizing it. Like, it's not like I watch it like, oh, here's my problems with it. Here's why I didn't love it. It's not that at all. It's not that everything starts from a 100. And as you notice problems with it, you kind of tick it down. There's things that just don't, we're just not all wired the same way. We don't all connect with the same things. And that's where, like, for me, I feel weird discussing certain things like this, where it's like, it's just not my thing. It's just not my genre. But I can fully be like, yeah, this is having grown up with a sister that had Broadway musicals on all the time and a wife that has Newsies on all the time. I can fully appreciate, like, the very interesting blend of classic Broadway, hip hop influence, and then being funny. And then the next scene, it's like really heartfelt and it touches on a lot of different things. I can respect all of that. And at the same time, be like, yeah, not for me. One analogy I've been thinking about a lot recently is it's kind of like if someone takes you out to have a new kind of food and they bring it to you and it's just not for you. It, like Thai cuisine, Indian cuisine, maybe it's just not for you. That doesn't mean they cooked it wrong. That doesn't mean they did anything wrong. It's just not a thing that you like.
Well, that's kind of what I was saying a little bit with Bad Boys, the Bad Boys movie. Like, I could see it was a good film. Like, it was well done. It's just not, that's just not something I enjoy in general, is that kind of film. I think they did a good job. And those kind of reviews are really, and sometimes I'll just abstain from posting a review or from reviewing it, because I just don't feel like, I don't know. I just don't feel qualified really to post a review on that kind of thing. Sometimes I have to, and then I have to be as fair and honest as I can. But yeah, I don't know. That's a thing. And at least I think it's worth, I would encourage people, even if you're not a musical person like yourself, I would encourage people to at least give it a shot. Right. Because I think it's important to get exposed to those things and to get out of your comfort zone from time to time.
I would totally agree. But to that point, I tried to expose my daughter to Hamilton and get her to be more cultured and into the arts so she's not an uneducated Philistine. And so I put on Hamilton. We get like 5 minutes in. She goes, when is the play going to change? How long is it going to be just like this? Are they going to go anywhere else? We get like 10 minutes in. She goes, I think there's too much play in this play. Like, I like the music, but I don't like the play. When is it going to stop being like this? I was like, okay, you're not wrong. There is a lot of play in this play, but This is what a Broadway musical is.
It does have some adult themes.
Yeah. They did
censor the profanity in the Disney version, but just so people know, it's got infidelity and other things like that that are discussed, murder, duels.
I was hoping to teach her about infidelity. Like that. It was like the perfect opportunity to have that conversation with her, is what I was thinking. All right, let's continue speaking about Hamilton. I'll bring Griffin back in. And now here's the other conversation about Hamilton that's been going on Twitter. Does Hamilton qualify as a movie? And does Hamilton qualify as a 2020 movie? So, Griffin, you haven't seen Hamilton yet.
I have not. I haven't seen the film or the musical or anything. So, yes.
How dare you,
I know.
You uncultured Philistine.
I would like to just thank everyone for mentioning Newsies, because I thought I was so alone in loving that musical and the film. I love the film. I don't think the film gets enough love.
That, like, Christian Bale musical.
Let's talk about that for a second. I think that musical has some of the catchiest songs ever. I love it. It's like a top three favorite musical for me. So yes, I just wanted to gush about that.
And President Bill Pullman is in it. The president.
Yes.
Of you guys' favorite movie, Independence Day.
By my favorite director in the world, Roland Emmerich. Yes, absolutely.
Does it qualify? Does a filmed Broadway musical qualify as a movie?
I don't think the Academy will let it qualify for award season, but I think there's a case to be made for it. I think it probably should qualify because it is a different production. Like, there is a director, there is a cinematographer. They frame things in a different way to emphasize certain emotions. So it's like, while it is a filmed musical, it is being made with the artistry of a feature film. So they're taking into account, like filmmaking, like what makes a good movie when they're shooting this. It's not just like watching just like a blank stage the whole time. There is, like I said, there is artistry behind it. So I think it should qualify. Obviously I can understand the hesitation to let it qualify, because obviously it's like, okay, well, this already won a bunch of Tonys on Broadway. It's like the performers have already been nominated for that, and so now they're coming back and doing the same thing over again. It's like, does that really count? But you know, it's different. It is different. So I and in a lot of cases, I think, you know, granted, I haven't seen either the film or the musical, but I think that the film, from what I've heard from people who have seen it, it does a good job of you know, digging deeper into the characters and the emotions just because of how it's shot. So it's like, if you can make an already like beloved musical even better just by like framing things certain way or editing things certain way, it's like, okay, so obviously this is a movie, whether or not it's filmed or not, you know? So like it, whether or not it's a filmed stage play or not. So I think it should qualify, but I understand the hesitation. I think there was like another production in the 90s, like 97 or something like that, where there was like a similar debacle going on, and the Academy ruled that that it was ineligible. So I think they're probably going to uphold that ruling, but for me personally, I think it should probably qualify.
And for me, I would probably count it as a documentary, not as
that's a good point.
A narrative. I think you basically count it in the same camp as your live concert documentaries.
Yeah.
You know, something like Shine a Light, or, you know, the ones that Scorsese has done, you know, the Ron Howard's done some recently. There was one on Pavarotti last year.
Concert movie. If
right.
Justin Bieber,
yeah. Yes. Katy Perry. I mean, I think that feels more right to me, but I think, yeah, to me, it counts as a 2020 movie. Pretty much all objective. It was going to be released in theaters. But I would probably think of it more as a documentary.
Yeah.
So is that the case that they were planning on releasing this in theaters? This was designed to be a released thing. Mm-hmm. And then the year 2020 hit. And so with the Disney Plus, that's.
Yeah, they paid $75 million. Disney paid for it. And and the plan, I think, was next October was the plan.
Yeah, it was supposed to come out next year. Yeah.
Releasing Hamilton. And then they were like, wow, we need to get everybody to stop thinking about Artemis Fowl. And. And so we got to release, release something.
It's a good strategy. And
they released Hamilton. Yeah.
They got everyone talking. Yeah.
I think based off of that, that for me is, I think, the thing that it falls into the movie category, whether you want to call it documentary, I think that it was designed to be released. Like, I didn't know the full backstory on it. If it was like, okay, wait, movie theaters are being shut down. We got all these problems. What do we have sitting on the shelf? Hey, we filmed a copy of Hamilton a few years back. Let's just throw that on Disney Plus. Like if it was that, I'd be like, that doesn't feel like a movie. But if it's intention, I think in the case of this makes a big difference.
Well, and I think the other thing that I, at least I think of, and I don't know if it was ever like nominated for anything, but I remember when that Michael Jackson like concert / documentary came out called This Is It. And it was like that. I agree with you, Rachel. It was like that was like it was a mixture of like a documentary and a musical. And I think it had it like qualified for stuff. And I'm sure that whoever released, I assume it was Disney released it. It was Sony who did it. I'm sure that they pushed that in the documentary category. And so I have to imagine that like Hamilton will probably fall under the same thing. But I don't know. You know what I like about this is that it brings up a conversation about this, because I think this is something that should be explored more, you know, you know, based off of the success of Hamilton on streaming right now, I assume that more streaming services are going to try and do something similar with like older musicals or really big hit shows and whatnot. And so like if it starts becoming a trend, they're going to have to address this sooner rather than later. So it's an interesting conversation for sure.
So we've had a couple super chats come in, and then real quick, we're going to dive into worst movies of the year. So be thinking about your worst movies of the year. If you're in the chat, what's the worst movie of the year thus far? This super chat come in from Lost in the Real. He said, Sean, you are the best, Sean. Thank you for your channel and all of your honesty. We respect you and love you. Well, thank you so much. That is greatly, greatly appreciated. And I don't know. Very cool. Thank you. Thank you.
You're the best, Sean. You're the best.
I don't know how to respond to that one except to say thank you. And then Majestic Demon had a question. He said with a super chat, thank you so much for that. Thoughts on Jude Law in talks to play Captain Hook? My first thought is that why are we getting another Peter Pan movie? Like, that's my only thought. Like, why are we getting another Peter Pan movie? I don't get it.
The only thing that makes me excited about this Peter Pan is that it's David Lowery, who did Pete's Dragon, which I loved. Mm-hmm. I've really liked all of his films. And so otherwise, I don't really care who they cast. It's fine. I trust him. He's made good movies. So that's the only reason, for me at least, to be excited about it.
I am looking at the other people that they had casted, that they had on their shortlist. So it was like Adam Driver and Joaquin Phoenix. First of all, Joaquin Phoenix was never going to do that movie. So the fact that they had him on their list is kind of hilarious. But Adam Driver fascinates me. That would have been a really inspired casting choice, because I think he would have brought something different to the role that we haven't seen before. With Jude Law, I love Jude Law. And I think... you know, he's chosen some really good projects as of late, but he's kind of like fallen by the wayside a little bit. I don't think he's in nearly as many great movies as he used to be. But like even that, it's like, well, I kind of know what I'm going to get with a Jude Law Captain Hook. I'm sure it's going to be like, you know, he's going to chew the scenery. It's going to be really exciting to watch. But I don't know. It's not a casting choice that like sends me over the moon about it. Like, I don't know. I'm going to be constantly comparing it to Jason Isaacs' portrayal in the 2003 Peter Pan movie, which to me is the definitive Peter Pan movie. And there should have been none made after that, because that's just like, that's a perfect Peter Pan film with perfect performances by the entire cast. An amazing James Newton Howard score. So, I don't know. Like, it's cool. We'll see what happens, but I'm not like uber excited about this.
Yeah. So we've got people repeatedly telling me in the chat that the Halloween Kills trailer has dropped. Obviously, we're live right now, so I can't comment on it or watch it because it would be a little bit rude.
Well, that's
I don't
know if that's 100% true. I think they dropped the trailer, but they also delayed the movie by a year. They delayed it to October of next year because of the situation.
Officially, or is that just rumor?
Oh, no. John Carpenter posted on his like Twitter, and he also said that they're on top of a traditional release. Universal has agreed to an IMAX presentation of the film in October of 2021. So you're gonna get to see Halloween Kills in IMAX next year.
Oh, very nice.
It's also stressful. Every delay is stressful for me.
Yeah.
I think we've said this, but on here before, me and you, Griffin, but like, it feels like they should just take everything off for 2020. And maybe they put it back on. Let's just see what happens. But like this whole like waiting for things to get cut. And it's like, no, we really think Tenet's going to come out in a month.
Yeah.
I doubt that. we'll see what happens.
The thing with Halloween is, and I just briefly like watched the trailer. There's nothing like crazy. It's just a bunch of like little shots, and then Mike Myers turning his head.
You abandoned us in the middle of this to watch a trailer.
It was pulled up on Twitter. I didn't actually listen to it. It was just right there. It's like 30 seconds. So it's not a big deal.
It's just one of those ones.
Yeah. It's like, hey guys, we're coming out next year,
no actual trailer. You got to wait a year for the movie. Like.
Yeah, I know. It's like
heartbreaking. I know.
But in that statement that John Carpenter released, he said in it that like, we weighed our options. We're like, we could release it this year with limited capacity. We have no idea what the world's going to be like, or we could just push it back next year. And, you know, hopefully sure handedly or like for sure have it come out, hit IMAX and all that stuff. So I think they made the right move. They want to get the most money they can for this thing. It doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, my friend was saying that it feels like this whole year has just been kind of erased. Yeah. And we're just going to start over like 2020 redo, which is so weird.
It wouldn't surprise me at all if that's kind of the way this plays out, because I mean, it just keeps getting, I mean, we're talking about an October movie getting pushed back a year. So it's already 4 months away and pushed back a year. So that's clearly they're looking at this thing that it's not getting good enough soon enough to be able to do this. So, I'm not surprised. I am a little bit surprised that a few of these studios think they're going to put a movie out in 4 weeks, or whatever. But, I'm in my heart, it's basically prepared for there's nothing for 6 months.
Yeah. And then Candyman also got pushed back 3 weeks to October 16th. I think it's only a matter of time before that gets delayed to next year too. So,
or with something like that one, it seems a little bit more like you could go VOD.
It could, but I don't know. I think they're going to try and do the theatrical thing just because, like, I think that could have the same impact as like a I don't know. It's like the Invisible Man or something like that. Like it could actually like get people interested in it. Plus, it's like a remake of like a popular. Like, would that come out like the 90s, the original 90s, one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's like it already has like name recognition. So I could see them wanting to make that a theatrical release, but I don't know.
Well, and Us did so well, and they're really trying to sell it, even though it's not directed by Jordan Peele. They're trying to sell it as a Jordan Peele produced, kind of like what they used to do with Tim Burton.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
All right. Well, let's move right along into our final little section here where we talk about the worst movies of the year. I thought we were going to like real quickly talk on one thing, and then we got some big news drop right in the middle of this. And luckily, Griffin is able to watch teaser trailers while talking with us.
You guys were talking about Hamilton. I mean, what the hell? I just figured I might as well.
Good call. That's true. I did kick you out of the stream for about 5 minutes there. So.
Yeah.
All right, Rachel, what are some of the worst movies this year for you?
Okay, so the worst movie of the year for me was The Wrong Missy. I mean, I didn't have much hope for it.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Happy Madison Productions in general, but I just hated it. I hated that character so much. She was so annoying.
Every character in that movie is the worst.
Yeah, and I just didn't laugh, so I thought it was terrible.
Yeah, I put it on as an ironic, like, all right, I should probably watch this. People want to know my opinion. I'll just put it on to see what happens. And my wife Jennifer was in the room, and she made it like 10 minutes. And she's like, nope, I'm done. Like, I don't even know what you're doing. You only get one life, and you're wasting it on this, and walks out of the room. And then when she wakes up the next day, walks out, and is like, all right, let me walk you through the plot of the movie. And then this happened, and then this happened, and then the Missy and his ex-girlfriend, they're all like, I just walked her through, and she's like, I hate you. I hate you for letting me even know what happened in this horrible, horrible movie. And then she's running and she trips and falls off of a cliff. It's a tree. Hilarious.
It's several times, not even just once. It's so bad. But the other one on that one.
And even just the basic premise of like casting David Spade as that character in the movie.
Oh, Lord.
Like pushing 60. And so he's pretty clearly, I mean, they make jokes all throughout the movie about his age, about like his hair maybe not being real and all this. I mean, it's just like, what are you guys doing? Like, what?
Anything can be funny. This just wasn't funny. And I don't know. It was just terrible. Another one, this is on the other end of the spectrum, because people think like Sundance movies can't be horrible, and they totally can't be. And I hated Horse Girl. They got a Netflix release. I thought it was, started out somewhat cute, but I just thought it was sci-fi mumbo jumbo, awful. I hated the script and the story and the way it treated mental illness, and it was not for me. So I didn't like that. I also hated Love Wedding Repeat. Which I'm the rom-com girl. I should have loved it, but ugh, I hated it. I hated all the characters. What is it? Was funny.
What is it?
Was it romantic?
No, what's the, where was this?
This was on Netflix. Love when it has great cast, Olivia Wilde's in it. And, but yeah. And then Doolittle. I didn't post a review on it because I literally fell asleep for 15 minutes. I do struggle sometimes, but it usually is only for like 30 seconds, like a little, oh, you know, kind of a thing sometimes when I fall asleep, but never, almost never have I ever fell asleep for that long. I missed the entire portion of a Tony Banderas' character. I didn't even see it.
Oh, you missed the part with the, was it the squirrel punches the, or kicks the tiger in the balls? Did you miss that part?
It was so boring. It was just such a dull movie. And of course I had to be awake for the flatulence scene with the dragon. What on earth? It was
bad.
In the trailer, like you see in the trailer, like, what is that? I wonder what that is. Then you see the movie and you're like, oh dear. Oh, wow. That is a choice right there.
Yeah, it was really bad. Really, really bad. And I'm like, I'm not rewatching it. I'm not sitting through that again. So I'm just not going to review it. Because I feel like it's not good faith to, if you've really fallen asleep for that long, you shouldn't. You need, you know, that's not, as a critic, I would never do that. Yeah. But I still didn't like it. I didn't like it very much. No.
I mean, for most of my reviews, I just read Rotten Tomatoes and then I try and summarize what people I think are thinking about it. I didn't even watch movies, really. Save some time.
Yeah. So yeah. That's my worst of the year. I think it was four.
How about you, Griffin? What are some of your worst?
Thankfully, I did not see Doolittle because I didn't want to put myself through that. And then I also didn't
see a little bit. It's tough because I mean, you just feel bad for Robert Downey Jr.
I don't know what that, I don't know.
Like,
why
the, like of all the things that he could do after, like, I mean, top of the world, in these mega blockbusters, beloved as a character, and follows it up with Doolittle. And it seems like he went for it too. I mean, he's come like,
yeah,
in whole was bizarre accent. And it's like, of all the things he could have done, oh man, why did
his production company made it?
Well, he probably had to at that point. They were like, listen, I'm gonna get involved here. You know, he probably tried to salvage it and then it just didn't work. I don't know. Maybe there was a good movie in there because I know he was attached to that forever, but that is just, from everything that I have heard, big oof. So I did not see that. I also did not see Fantasy Island because I didn't want to. It looked absolutely terrible.
I'll touch on that one in just a few moments.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with what I have seen. And from what I have seen, I have two here at the bottom that I absolutely hated. My least favorite movie of the year so far is probably Capone. It was just an absolutely miserable viewing experience, that had potential, but like, wow, it's just like, it's torture porn without like
in the weirdest way possible.
It's just, it's so awful with nothing interesting to say. It just like continuously tortures Tom Hardy throughout the entirety of the film.
Humiliating torture, like humiliation. Yeah.
It is. Yeah. Just really, really bad. I don't know. I just, the more I think about it, the less I like Josh Trank as a filmmaker. I think it's just kind of a one hit wonder. But and then the other one that I didn't like at all, man. And obviously I hated Sonic too, but like Call of the Wild, like, I guess I wasn't expecting much because the trailers were terrible, but that movie was just, I don't know. It wasn't good. And it felt like they sanitized obviously it's a family story, but it's just like they took out, I guess, the stuff that made the Call of the Wild like special. And then there was just an abundance of CG and green screen and it looked awful. And I'm just like, well, if you look at what they did with Togo, they did the dog better there. Like they did a mix of like a husky with like a CG hybrid. Whereas like in Call of the Wild, it was just this like balloon looking dog. Like it didn't even look real at all. And so, I don't, I mean, like Harrison Ford has a couple of charming moments, but it's just like, he's doing his old man thing. So I don't know. It was just kind of like really boring to sit through it. And it just wasn't good.
Dan Stevens was so bad.
What the hell was he doing in that? He's so much better than that.
Wait, your best friend Dan Stevens? Yes. Call 2 weeks ago.
That poor guy. Listen, I don't know what went on with there. Whether someone had some dirt on him or something, but that's not. Yeah. That is not like indicative of the kind of performer he is. But I don't know, maybe it gave him an opportunity to like just like dress up, go over the top and be really hammy. Like I don't know. Maybe that was
to do that in Eurovision. It's kind of a weird year for him.
Yeah.
I was like, you left Lady Mary for this?
What? Yeah. Well, okay.
Just kidding.
Well, I didn't. No. I thought Eurovision was a little bit of a disappointment. Actually, that would probably be one of my biggest disappointments of the year is Eurovision, just because I like saw the potential, but it couldn't decide what movie it wanted to be. But Dan Stevens was like incredible in that. And he was like doing the like, you know, the overly charismatic, like wealthy oligarch, like Russian person. Like, so I can see him do larger than life characters and do them well. Him in Call of the Wild is, I don't know if I've ever seen a more stereotypical cartoon than that.
It was so bad.
And it was written poorly because he didn't even need to be in the movie. Like it was just like, it added nothing to it. So yeah, Call of the Wild is terrible. And then obviously I hated Sonic the Hedgehog.
Pause real quick. Go back to Eurovision. So I'm guessing that this is going to be the movie with the strangest connection to me this year.
Eurovision?
Eurovision, yeah. So I gave it a bad review, and it's like if you ranked out the 40 movies I've seen this year, it's like number 30. So it's like bottom 25 of the year this far. So it's in my bottom 10 of the year this far, based off my review and where I kind of placed my ranking. I've also watched it 3 times in 10 days or whatever that is.
Yeah.
And so it's this movie that does like it works really well on probably the most important or two of the three most important things about it. Like, do the songs work? Yeah, they're catchy. They're on loop in my house. Do the emotional moments and payoff at the end work? Yeah. Did I think it was funny? No, I thought the humor almost all fell pretty flat. There's obviously, if you throw that much at the wall, something's going to stick. But
yeah,
so much of it I thought just was like too generic of Will Ferrell doing the same shtick he's been doing for 20 years instead of actually finding the humor in Eurovision itself.
I was going to say, I thought it was almost to the point where it's like, I couldn't figure out if the movie was actually like purposely trying to be unfunny or not, you know?
Right. Yeah. Like, it was very like some of the stuff going on. I was like, I don't, this is very weird mix of stuff. But yeah. And my wife's watched it 7 times and she is not a Will Ferrell person like at all. And wow. So like, but she does that. She kind of picks these musicals or rom-coms or something. She picks a different one every once in a while. And that's what she goes to bed to. And she puts it on. But when she puts it on, she doesn't go to bed and she just stays up late, like in infinite scrolling through Facebook and stuff like that. And, you know, looking for comforters on Amazon or whatever she does. So she watched it 7 times and we literally watched it. She's like, yeah, that wasn't very good. And then immediately watched it 6 more times. She kind of did the same thing with Pitch Perfect when it first came out. She's like, she watched it 3 times in one night. Like, it came out, I fell asleep watching it before it was over, and I kept waking up, and it was always the middle of the movie. I was like, what's going on? It's like 4 in the morning, the movie's still on, and she's still awake. She watched it 3 times in a row, and I was like, wow, you must have loved that movie. She goes, I guess it was okay. And she's had it on loop for 7 years now or something. Like,
yeah.
I'm jealous. I never get to rewatch movies hardly ever anymore because there's always something else I have to be watching.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, that's where sometimes people are like, hey, Sean, why haven't you watched The Godfather? Why haven't you watched through this? I'm like, well, there's 2 of us in this house, or there's 5 of us in this household, and I can't always be like, wife, watch this rated R serious drama with me right now.
Yeah.
You know, that's not exactly how this works. I've seen Eurovision a whole bunch of times instead of watching all these other things that I should watch. All right, I cut you off as we're going into.
No, that's fine. Yeah.
Sonic and how awesome it was.
Yeah, no, I don't want to like spend too much time on this because I think I voiced on another podcast that I just didn't like the movie. I've seen it just felt lazy to me. It was like they were trying to do Deadpool for kids and it was unfunny. And like Sonic was annoying and he was also kind of a jerk. And like, I understand that's like part of the character's like MO, like that's who he is. He's arrogant and stuff like that. But like he made James Marsden feel bad about wanting to go pursue his like follow his dreams. Like, and I'm like, screw you, Sonic. You've been around for like 5 minutes and now you're going to like guilt trip James Marsden into staying in this small like Midwestern town. No, go screw yourself. Like, that's just like that. I don't know. There's just. And I mean, Jim Carrey was great. Anytime we get a chance to see Jim Carrey do a character like that, I love it. It's fun. But I mean, I don't know. I guess I just wasn't the target demographic for this. It was bad. So.
All right. My turn. Talk about my worst. Let me see. Where is my list? Okay. So we already talked about The Wrong Missy. That's bottom three for me of just like, oh my goodness, this is brutal to get through. Unfunny. And it like rapey too at certain points, and I'm like, you get into it and you're like, oh, did they even stop to think about what's going on in this scene? Other ones, Fantasy Island. A lot of people in the chat saying Fantasy Island. I would totally agree. When you're talking about people going to an island of fantasies and you think they would come up with something creative, no, it's like two douchebags are like, let's go to a party with a pool. And then there's a guy like, I want to be a soldier. I mean, it's that. Like, there's no creativity to it. And then as it goes along, it gets like dumber and dumber until you get to the end and there's like a big twist reveal. And you're like, what? What? I mean, it's ridiculous. Makes no sense. And it's just a twist ending for the sake of a twist ending that does not satisfy at all. And then The Grudge, I thought was just tedious to get through. It's like a grim looking movie. I don't like the format of any of the Grudge movies where they do like 3 different stories with a narrative that kind of ties together. This one seemed to do it even worse than before. And it's also like, let's give everybody a really depressing backstory and then have the house kill them. Like, okay, well, that's grim.
Yeah.
Like, we want to have kids. We have kids. You're not going to have kids. You're going to die.
I genuinely forgot that movie came out until you just mentioned it. Like that was January, beginning of January.
That's what I think in my review, I kicked it off like, as of right now, this is in my top 10 of the decade. It's in my top 10 of the year. It will stay there until 10 more movies have come out, in which case it will promptly be gone. Something like that. It was a really good line.
You challenged 2020.
I did.
It's not your fault. We've only had We barely have 10 movies.
Those are my bottom three, and then Artemis Fowl. I don't know. It's not in my bottom three necessarily, and I can't say I was disappointed because I didn't have high expectations. But of movies that are unbelievably below where they should be, in that regard, I can't think of a movie that fell below the bar of the studio, the cast, and the director. And even the source material.
Yeah,
like, how did you guys have all of this stuff and end up down here?
Yeah. It looked terrible. I actually thought about seeing Fantasy Island because it was PG-13. And so I thought, well, maybe I should see it, trying to expand on my comfort zone. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
And like, I mean, Artemis Fowl isn't a good movie. I mean, it's barely even a complete movie.
Yeah. Exactly.
But like, I didn't think it was the abysmal piece of trash that a lot of people did. Like, I have seen worse movies. At least it was pretty to look at and the music was good. And like, again, it showcases that Kenneth Branagh can do visual world building really well. So like, it's a failure and it's a disappointment, but like, I don't know, when I compare it to something like Capone, which was just literally torture to sit through, I have to say, okay, I mean, I'd rather watch Artemis Fowl. So.
Yeah. I mean, that's where they kind of fall into a weird category of like, there's the enjoyable things in it. I watch that one and I go, this should be so much better than it is. That's like it, when you have no excuses for why this is, you don't have, there's no limitations that led to this. They just dropped the ball.
Yeah.
And I think it just felt like a pilot to a TV series, not a movie.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great way of putting it, because I was like, when the film ended, I was like, okay, I kind of want to see where this goes in the next movie. Oh, wait, we'll probably never get that movie because this was an hour and a half long feature film, not an hour and a half long HBO whatever, like pilot. So,
Okay, we got just a few more minutes on here. If you were to say, like, what are a couple of movies that you just maybe lesser viewed, what would you recommend for people to kind of check out from this year that maybe they haven't heard of? Maybe it's something you already mentioned, or maybe it's not something you mentioned. Maybe it's, you know, number 10 on your list or something, but it's a real nice little discovery that it isn't getting talked about enough.
I loved Emma. That's my favorite movie of the year so far. I just thought it subverted expectations enough, but without being too much as a hardcore Austinite. I thought it was funny. I thought it was very well cast. I just really, really loved it. And that I highly recommend. Also, Bad Education. I thought the script was so good in that movie, and very well acted as well. Shaun the Sheep, Farmageddon. If you want a cute animated film, super, super cute. And I really enjoyed it. I love Aardman. The Vast of Night. I saw that at a drive-in, and that was such a
cool experience. Cool.
Yeah.
And it's one of those movies that's like, I'm going to watch out for these people because the movie had its flaws. It was so well made, and they made really interesting choices. And I think they're going to do really interesting things coming up after it.
Yeah.
It was a really interesting first project, I think.
Yeah.
And then Palm Springs, it comes out this week on Hulu, and funny, romantic, enjoyable. It is R-rated, but I really thought it was clever and enjoyed that. And then a movie called The Truth. This is by director Hirokazu Koreeda, who has done only Japanese films up until now. And he's brilliant. So underseen, underappreciated, I think. His movies are so good. And this was a lovely little slice of life movie. Some people might think it's boring. I really enjoyed it, about this woman who, Catherine Deneuve, is a movie star that is trying to reconnect with her family, with her daughter, and has Juliette Binoche in it and Ethan Hawke. I thought it was excellent if you like those kind of just walking with characters and spending time with them. And then I liked Onward. I thought Onward was really good.
Yeah, it was.
I thought it was sweet and had a lovely message and had some creative ideas. And it's maybe not it's not going to be up there with Wall-E or something like that, but I really enjoyed it. And so that's what I would say.
Griffin, how about you? What are some of those nice movies that we haven't discussed thus far, but you would recommend people check out, especially some of those deeper cuts? Actually, I want to pause real quick. I watched Emma for the first time a couple weeks back, and that's a classic, another example of a movie that's just not on my wavelength. We've had to pause every 10 minutes for my wife to explain to me what was going on. Just too tense. Like, I don't understand how they're talking. How does culture work back then? What's going on? I don't get it. But my wife, however, as soon as it ended, she went and rewatched the Gwyneth Paltrow one. She was like, I'm in an Emma mood. And dubbed back-to-back Emmas. Sorry, with that, Griffin, continue.
No, you're good. So, piggybacking off of what Rachel said, Palm Springs, I loved Palm Springs. That's like a top three favorite film of the year so far. Like, it is, it's funny.
I haven't seen this one, but also talk fast because my battery on my laptop said 5%. So we've only got a few minutes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, you're fine. So Palm Springs, it's like the Lonely Island film with Andy Samberg and Kristen Milioti. J.K. Simmons is in it. It's basically like a Groundhog Day film where they live the same day over and over again. The less you know about it, the better, because there's a lot of great surprises. Really comedic, really heartfelt, really genuine. And it's a nice allegory for marriage, if you want to take it that way. So do with that as you will. But I have an absolute blast with that one. My favorite film of the year is The Five Bloods. So I just will continue to recommend that to every single person out there. That is a hand grenade right now. So I freaking love that movie, with an amazing performance from Delroy Lindo. There's a great IFC Midnight film coming out this week called Relic, which I adored. And I don't know how many people know about this film, but they need to go watch it, because it's like, I guess it's a psychological thriller / horror film, but it's rooted in real world horror, like stuff that it basically amplifies. The whole movie is basically a giant allegory for like dementia. And it follows like three generations of women and how they deal with this, you know, lineage of trauma and stuff like that. So, I guess Sean got his laptop charger. There we go.
I don't know if my wife is watching downstairs, or sometimes my friends are watching. And so then I'm probably one of my friends saw me say that, and then they texted my wife.
Well, good. Okay.
Save the day.
I rewired my setup. So it's also, I'm not even sure where to plug it in at the moment. We're going to lose that.
Well, if Sean cuts out, we'll just hang on until he comes back on. But so Relic, really, really good. Emily Mortimer. It's only like an hour and 30. It's a slow burn, but like it's a really effective slow burn. And when the climax creeps up on you, it just hammers home some amazing tension and great messages and relatable themes. It's a really emotional movie. So I love that. And then the Gentleman, like, which came out earlier this year, Guy Ritchie's new film, which I don't know. I guess the movie kind of just left the conversation, just sort of came and went. I loved it. And I think it's probably one of his best movies to date. So if you haven't checked it out, it's got a great ensemble cast: Henry Golding, Hugh Grant, Charlie Hunnam, all the usual Guy Ritchie guys, plus a few added people. And if you like that, like, Guy Ritchie London gangster film, like this is, It's just him in the pocket. So I absolutely loved that one.
All right. So let me see what I've got on my list. I lost my stuff. I lost my notes. So distracted by everything going on in the world. All right. So kind of going through some of my top movies of the year, Invisible Man. We already talked about that one a little bit. Love that one. Yeah. The Way Back. Love Gavin O'Connor, and then just touched on some stuff that hits close to home for me. Extraction, as the action movie guy, looks like that's probably going to be the best straightforward action movie of the year. Just movies that, are straightforward plot and just awesome choreography. Looks like that's going to be the winner. Here's a deeper cut. It was one called VFW. I saw it at Fantastic Fest last year, and it's like a John Carpenter throwback movie. And I mean, it feels like a movie he would have done. I mean, from the text on the screen and everything, the pacing, the nature of it, really, really dug that one. And then actually, I should have mentioned this one. It surprises. The King of Staten Island surprised me a little bit. I'm not always the biggest Judd Apatow fan. It felt like he'd been a little bit of a rut. He'd done the last few that I'd seen, I hadn't been crazy about. And then yeah. I thought that one actually worked pretty well as a character study. So that was some of my favorites of this year. And then, yeah, we talked about most of the other ones. And I really dug The Gentleman, too. Of you know, Guy Ritchie, I'd kind of written him off that, you know, I dug Aladdin enough. That one's also one that's on repeat in my house. But it's not – it's like a Disney product with, like, a pinch of Guy Ritchie, whereas The Gentleman was the return to classic Guy Ritchie that we haven't had since Snatch. Mm-hmm. And so that was a very pleasant surprise to get Guy Ritchie back to us.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Any other thoughts on the year 2020 when it comes to movies? It's been a weird year to understate the obvious.
Yeah. I think the thing I've liked about it, though, is it's encouraged people to go seek out smaller films. Like a lot of these IFC films that are coming out, like Relic, Dave Franco's The Rental, Shirley, stuff like that. Well, I guess Shirley was Hulu, but like still a lot of movies that probably wouldn't get the most attention, especially during the summer movie season, and would kind of be, you know, overlooked, are now becoming part of the conversation. And I love that. I think that that's, it shows that there's great movies out there and there's still a lot of films that are hitting VOD or whatever that have merit. And so, I hope that,
you know, going for the wrong Missy. I mean, that was
just yeah. Like a pleasant. Of course. I mean, God, David Spade back in his prime again.
Right. The David Spade we've been waiting for since Tommy Boy.
I know. Exactly. So yeah, you get little gems like that, that just make you go, yeah, like, okay, it's the films are still out there. They're still great. You just gotta, you know, look a little harder and be more open to different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's been fun to see a revival of The Drive-In. Who would have ever thought that?
Right.
Yeah. We have Ghostbusters winning the July 4th weekend. Like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Wait, like, what is it? So, Walmart is like doing some initiative where they're like throwing up drive-in theaters in their parking lots and stuff like that. Like, mm-hmm. That's kind of the fun stuff about this year. Like, there's interesting things that are making returns, and the novelty of it is pretty fun. And in a world where you have all these excuses not to go to a drive-in, suddenly we have the year where it's like, it's making a comeback. Mm-hmm. What a weird year.
Very weird.
Really? Yeah.
We hope everybody's safe.
Yeah. If you guys want to throw some questions in the comment section, we'll take some questions for just a few minutes because I did get this charger. We won't go the full forever like sometimes we do where we go on forever, but we'll take a few of your questions down below if you want to throw in a super chat on that one. On the audio version, we're going to close this out. If you've enjoyed this podcast, be sure to leave a like, a review, a score. Griffin, where can we find you on the internet?
Yeah, you can find me over on the Film Speak channel, and then you can find me on Twitter at Griff Schiller.
Rachel, where can we find you? And do you have anything exciting coming up on your channel in the near
future? Yeah. So you can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all of our social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. So please check all of that out. I'm going to be doing another episode of the Female Film Critics Speak Out. We did our first episode week or so ago, and it was really great. And I have three new female critics, including Mara Reinstein, who is published in Huffington Post. She's going to be coming on, and we're going to be talking about being a female film critic. And I'm really proud of it. I'm really excited about it. So that's something to look forward to. We also have Talking Disney coming up. We're going to be doing The Princess and the Frog with the new change of Splash Mountain. So that's going to be fun. And then also the Hallmarkies podcast, we have a lot of really fun stuff coming up there. We have our interview and ranking with Christopher Paloha movies, and he's a big name over in the world of Hallmark. And so if you want to see me interview Christopher Paloha and rank his movies, check it out. You'll enjoy it. It's a lot of fun.
So that'll do it for the audio version of the podcast today. Thank you. Those aren't words. I just wanted to close out with nonsense words. Just end on a memorable note. Thank you guys so much for listening, and keep talking movies too much.